What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. This is episode number 142. My name is Jared. I'm here with Paul.
What up?
We're coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. Today, we're going to be talking all about UFC 277 with a couple big questions coming out of there. Number one, who can beat Amanda Nunes? Number two, how bad can the UFC commentary get? We're going to discuss the rest of the card. We're going to take a look ahead to the Santos versus Hill card. Then we're also going to touch on some boxing today. Namely, did Jake Paul get scared of facing Rahman, a real boxer? We're going to see all that and more coming up on this edition of SWAT MMA. Before we get to the combat sports, you know what time it is. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day. What do we got here today, Paul?
We got a couple real good strains here. We got our mac and cheese from over there at Wallflower. That's made by their house brand, Mojo. I'm honestly like starting to like all these little... They seem like they do well with their house brand over there, and it's good deals over there, too.
I haven't been to Wallflower yet, but I can't deny
it's so far from this. Right here. It's by me, but you know I'm on the other side of the world. So.
Yeah, it's not exactly in the area where we got our studio here.
Yeah.
Mac and cheese is a cross of mac and alien cheese. The mac is alien cookies crossed with Miracle 15. We got alien coming in on both sides. Alien cheese is alien rift crossed with blue cheese. I always liked the blue cheese strain. Personally.
Yeah, blue cheese is always... I've never had a blue cheese that was like, ugh. I always like the smell of it, too. All like the cheese, like, you know, head cheese, blue cheese, all those, like, different cheese strains. Always like... Yep. That skunky flavor it gives to it is always freaking...
Yeah, they earn their name with the funky smell and flavor, and I like it as well. We've also got some pink runts today. Pink runts is a runts phenotype, and runts is a cross of Skittles and gelato.
Runts is always good. I always like every runts different like type.
Yeah, what sets this phenotype apart is namely its smell. It smells extra fruity, extra sweet.
Yeah.
It's got a real nice flavor.
That it's color
super
on it's
dark
great.
Weed. It's very very dark purples in there, dark greens. Mm-hmm. You break it down in the dark, in low light, it's like it's practically black.
I was gonna say break it down in the dark, you can't find it.
I don't like it. All right, man. Well, let's dive right into some combat sports, though, as we continue to puff down on this delicious herbage. If you're smoking with us today, hope you're smoking on something delicious and legal like we are. Let's talk about the big pay-per-view of last weekend, Paul. We've got UFC 277, which is headlined by one legitimate title fight, which was Amanda Nunes in her rematch against then-champion Juliana Pena. Mm-hmm. Then we had the co-main, which was a great fight and a great matchup, but we both decided, as many fans, bullshit title here.
Yeah.
Another one of the UFC's silly interim titles, which is proved not necessary by the fact that the champion of the division was right there, uninjured, and in the cage after the fight. It made the whole thing look kind of silly.
Yeah, with bruises all over his face like he had been training.
Yeah, clearly dude's been sparring, but that's not anything to really talk about right now because the fights were so good. Let's talk about that co-main event, though, first, what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
We had Kai Kara France squaring off against Brandon Moreno in what is essentially the number one contender spot. Mm-hmm. Now, to refresh some of our listeners here, the champion is not injured, despite what the UFC may have told you. He wanted more cash. He publicly came out and asked for more cash after only earning a publicly disclosed $100,000 in his last fight.
Yeah.
The UFC promptly just created an interim belt, is basically the short story. They created an interim belt.
It also had to do with he also didn't want to fight Brandon Moreno a fourth time. He wanted to fight Kai Kara France, and yes. They wanted him to fight Moreno the fourth time.
Yeah, and he wanted someone different, which is hard to fault somebody after facing somebody three times in a row for a championship belt. I get it. One of them was a draw, whatever. I didn't want to see it either. I mean, I'm still not that interested in the fight. But Now, the UFC has effectively forced Figueiredo to fight Brandon Moreno no matter what, because now he's an interim champion. They can strip him and take his belt away. They have a champ. Mm-hmm. He can't say he has no choice. Yeah. You fight this guy or you're done.
Yeah. Not only that, you know why I hate a lot of these interim title fights, and it has more to do with like the flack the fighter gets that wins sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, it's not their fault.
No, it's not Brandon,
like, it's not Brandon Moreno's fault. He's the interim. Well,
was he like, going to do turn it down?
Yeah, what's he going to be like, oh, no, I don't want to be the interim champion? Like, come on, guys. Like, that's what sucks about it is, like, people, like, although I agree with you with everything you said as far as, like, it doesn't really hold much, like, weight and, like, there's really no need for it. The last thing that needs to happen, though, also is, like, people, because I've seen a lot of this online, people, like, hating on Brandon Moreno for it. It's like, dude, he is the champion of the world, and whether you think so or not, because, I mean, he's got a win over the champion. The champion didn't want to fight him again, and now he just beat the guy he wanted to fight and did it in fantastic fashion that got him a performance of the night bonus on top of it. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
I understand his like point of view as far as like wanting to fight someone else, though. But like, there's also when you're the champion, you kind of have to take the fights you're given. Like in mixed martial arts, at least, like in boxing, it's different. But like, seems like just UFC is forcing. Yeah,
they control everything. Yeah.
Boxing is different because the promoters don't control the belt.
Yeah.
So the UFC is going to do what the UFC does. We talked about it endlessly. If you're a fan of the sport, you know about. I mean, interim titles are supposed to be when champions cannot fight. Division must carry forward. The UFC uses them as bargaining chips, forced negotiation tactics. Pay-per-view bullshit, whatever. Yeah. But it is what it is. But Brandon Moreno did a great job. Let's talk about the fight. Kai Kara France, Brandon Moreno. First two rounds, Moreno's all over him. Third round comes out. Kai Kara France turns the tables all over Brandon Moreno, piecing him the fuck up. And then...
Brandon Moreno lands one of the nastiest freaking kicks to the body and drops him and finishes him by TKO.
Straight to the liver.
Yeah, it was bad. Out. Yeah.
Instantly to the ground, clutching his liver.
You know what it was, too? It was one of those scenarios where he looked like he still wanted to fight, but his body's like, bro, we're going down. It was like, we got it. We're done. And it was just perfectly placed, man.
Yeah,
like,
for those that don't know, a well-placed liver shot, be it from a punch or a kick, is basically equal to a knockout, like a well-placed headshot that renders you unconscious. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make you unconscious, but it does shut your body down.
Yep.
Not only the fact that it hurts like a motherfucker, and you just can't do nothing. You fall to the ground, you clutch your stomach, and you're stuck for a few.
And that hurting him very bad was evident when they raised Brandon Moreno's hand, and they both were standing there, and Kai came up with a giant welt on the side of his body. You know what I mean?
Already, mere minutes. I mean, wait till the next day.
Yeah.
Both sides are gonna be a rainbow of black and different colors. It was a great performance from Moreno.
Because
it really looked like he was in trouble then. Not that he was on the verge of losing, but it definitely.
He just got caught in a bat.
Kai Kara France turning the tables.
Yeah.
Found his rhythm. I've never seen Moreno get pieced up like that before. Mm-hmm. He came out of that fight looking busted up on social media.
Yeah.
But he showed real true grit in timing that. That wasn't a lucky shot.
No.
He trains that liver kick.
He's known for going to the body. He's known for starting his combos high and ending at the body shots. He hit Figueiredo with a lot of good body shots in their freaking three fights they had, too. That is his game. And I just feel like even in this fight where you came in with Moreno switching camps, heading over, and now his head coach is James Krause, I thought Krause was great in the corner. Like, his ability to kind of point out where Kai was making mistakes and helping Brandon make sure they kept doing it, I thought was perfect. Because there was a weird style that first round they came out with. It was a lot of trying to catch punches, and Moreno really putting his foot on the gas as far as his offense. And I don't really feel like Kai got any offense going until late in the second, early in the third, when he got him on the ground and hit him with the big ground and pound. But outside of that, I thought Brandon was pretty handily winning the exchanges. It was a lot of defense by Kai, and it's hard to score that when you're also getting, you know, does one thing about Brandon Moreno, he's always a more volume fighter. He's always trying to push the pace and take people into the deep water.
For sure.
But when he's landing that, and you're just, although Kai landed big shots, he just wasn't landing enough for me to really even give him any kind of advantage in those first two rounds. But then in the third, that ground and pound, he almost finished Brandon there for a second.
Very close.
Dude, when he got him with his hands behind his back and he came up, I was like, oh, shit. Because he hit him with some big shots. But that just speaks to Brandon's chin, man. We've seen Brandon drop so many times, and he just never goes out.
Well, Brandon's a great fighter. It was a great fight. I don't mind the fourth fight so much now because I feel that Moreno earned it. My main problem was that it was instantaneous for both fighters. It sucks for the champ in a way. I feel like, okay. But he should feel a little bit better, too, because Moreno went out and earned it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the result's the same. You're still fighting the same guy, but you don't feel like he's just, like, how many times you got to beat him while he
well, that's what I mean.
Gifted title shot, for fuck's sake. I mean, you know.
Well, so, that's what I mean with that fourth fight being inevitable, even, like, it could have just happened already, you know. That's kind of where I'm at with, like, Figueiredo and him is, like, it just could have already happened, you know. Could be out of the way, and both of them could have been on to the next one in their career anyways. But now it's been drawn out. We're going to get it a fourth time, like everyone knew we deserved in the end.
So it's cool. I think that this fight should come with a stipulation on it, though. That's my only real ask in this fight, because you know that Dana often calls me up and says, Jared, what do you think I should put stipulation-wise for this title fight? And so this time I'm going to tell Dana that, you know, the loser of this fight must go to the next division above. So we do not see Moreno versus Figueiredo 5. That's the only thing I got to say.
That's my problem, is I think both of them have a scenario in their career where I got to see both of them fighting at 35. And so, like, we might see it a fifth time at 135.
If it's at 35, I'll make an allowance for it if they earn that shit. But not for the flyweight title, not in the next 3 years. It's 3 years or a different weight class. That's what you got. Dana, please, and thank you, because that's what will happen. But no, it was fun. It was good to see. The title's silly. Let's talk about the title that was very serious, though, on this card. A true championship fight, which was the main event.
Rematch, yeah.
You know, just to put it in perspective in case some people out there somehow, you know, have forgotten, Juliana Pena, you know, she wins the title by submitting Amanda Nunes.
It was like her first loss in like 10 years or something like that.
A very long time. It came in the second round. And there was a lot of talk about how Nunes was doing quite well in the first round and came out and looked gassed and fought really sloppy in the second round. And Pena really seized on that and choked her out. Mm. And there were some people that thought that it was the end of Nunes, end of an era.
Including myself.
And some people that thought that, you know, it was kind of a, not a fluke, but it had to do with both Pena seizing the moment and being a deserving person in a title fight who did what they're supposed to do, is seize on a champion's mistake and a champion who came out and fought sloppy and maybe didn't take the shit serious.
Yeah.
Which is what I thought.
Yeah. I know.
And I was right.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a beatdown.
Oh, yeah.
It was an absolute beatdown. The final scores were 50-45, which is a complete wash, 50-44. Which there's one 10-8 round given, and 50-43, which means there was two 10-8 rounds given. And I heard some flack on that 50-43. I say it's about time we see some scores like that for once. I mean, what, is this not a beatdown?
I think second round was definitely a 10-8. I think the only other 10-8 could maybe be like the fourth, maybe.
See, I disagree wholeheartedly, because I don't understand how you don't, by you, I don't mean you, Paul, I mean you, meaning UFC statisticians or whoever runs these things, doesn't see that there was two knockdowns in the first, and there was 5 to 6 knockdowns in the first two rounds, and several of them came in the first round. Even Dana said that afterward.
Yeah.
Like, so it's not a knockdown in MMA if you crack her and she goes to her fucking knee? That's not a knockdown?
Yeah, that is kind
of. It is a knockdown.
Yeah.
Like,
There was only one of them that I could really, in the first round, say wasn't a knockdown, and it was like, when they were in that weird scenario, like, yeah, she still hit her, but, like, they both popped up real quick. That's the only one that's, like, real debatable. All the other ones were all knockdowns, for sure. I think there was, like, five. Then.
So I think that they all should have been
50-44s.
Person.
Oh, yeah, 50-44. Yeah.
You know, I would have been happy if just one 10-8 round had been given. Although, I'm not mad at there being two. I'm actually, like, yeah. I'd rather fucking see that, honestly.
it was definitely dominant. It was merited in that situation.
It was an absolute statement. A lot of people are already calling it possibly Amanda Nunes' greatest career performance outside of the Cyborg fight.
It's gotta be.
She made it a point to not only do stand-up, but also to take her down on the ground. There was, you know, a strong argument to be made that she could have kept that standing and knocked her out, and she chose to engage on the ground, which she has shown in the past of wanting to do things like that when there's narratives built around her opponents. And there was a big narrative in MMA media about Pena being the quote-unquote ideal fighter to beat Nunes because of her pressure, stamina, and wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Not shitting on Pena's wrestling, I just found that weird because I didn't know that Amanda Nunes couldn't handle wrestlers. I thought we had finished that fucking question a long time ago.
Yeah. I don't think it's even like her wrestling either. I think it's more her jiu-jitsu. Like, I think Amanda has good jiu-jitsu, but she doesn't, like, I feel like Pena's just a little bit sharper. And that's why I thought it was dumb. I was like, what is Amanda doing? Like, she could have, this fight could be over. And I understand she has done that in the past where she wants to make a point, but that almost bit her in the ass.
It's
the only point of the fight in which Pena had any kind of chance, and any point where she could have won would be on the ground, and it came close, but it just was too late and just wasn't out of position, and it was just a beatdown the whole
time.
Right,
that armbar attempt she had.
Yeah, that was the only, that's the only thing anybody could hold on to. Like, it was so weird how, yeah, it was just the only spot. There was no other point in which Pena was winning whatsoever.
Right,
and I thought
exactly.
She fought more emotional, to be honest, in this fight. She was doing a lot of, like, on the feet, she was doing a lot of, like, flurry striking and just leaving her chin out there. Like,
yeah,
she abandoned her jab that was what was winning her the first fight. There was a lot of stuff that she did in the first fight that, I mean, the stamina thing, I agree with you, like, Nunes was, cardio looked way better in this fight, but there was a lot of stuff that Pena did well in the first fight that she just straight up abandoned in this fight, and I think was a big part of why she got her ass just fucking took to the ringer.
I agree with you, and I think there's a reason why she abandoned it. It's because Nunes came out and cracked her several times.
Mm-hmm.
And you could almost see it on Pena's face over the course of rounds one and two, because she's a very cocky woman, as you should be as a fighter. I'm not throwing shade.
Part of what
but
makes
she wears
good.
It on her face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like they're all cocky, but some of them you could just look at them and be like, oh, okay, you definitely think you're the shit.
Yeah.
And we all know she does.
Mm-hmm.
And but that look
as
changed.
You have to.
Like,
yeah.
That fucking look on her face changed. She had a little bit of, like, what the fuck on her face at the start of round three.
Yeah.
And I think that led to a lot of it. Those right hands, that fucking little right overhand, like, hook that Nunes was throwing was right as Pena was coming in, so it had the dual impact of a moving forward.
Well, you know what? She was leaving it there for her, though, because
early
in the fight, she let, like, it was like Amanda kind of let her make all the mistakes in the first two rounds. Like, if you look at the first round, she kind of let Juliana, like, push the pace on her to see what she was going to do. And every time Juliana would, like, come in with those flurries, she would let Juliana hit her with, like, three of them. And, like, after the fourth one missed, she would land that fucking overhand. Well, it wasn't even like an overhand. It was like an overhand, but it was because
Juliana... It was like an overhand hook
combo, almost coming down a little. If they were at range, it would be an overhand. But, like, because Juliana was coming in, she just angled it in
and
fucking landed
it
every time.
It was really
nice.
It was very nice. Like, and it was stunning. Like, Pena's got a tough chin, dog.
Oh, for sure. There were so many times where I was just like, holy shit, like... She should just be out. Like, you know, like, when she got knocked off her feet, how do you get knocked clean off your feet in the air, like, airborne, and you're still awake, like, when you hit the ground? Like, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
dude? Like,
she's solid. Got a chin. Like, her brain doesn't get rattled easy at all.
Yeah. But it was a lot, like I'm saying, a lot of it was mistakes, man. It was a lot, I think, in the first two rounds, it was she just let Juliana make all the mistakes. She just stayed true, stayed solid, and because that was the biggest thing that I think made her lose the first fight, was she came out reckless as fuck.
Dude, that second round. I remember I was trying to text you, what is she doing?
Yeah, because like, remember the first round? The first round in their fight, like, had two breaking points. Like, the first 2.5 minutes, it was like Amanda just trying to hunt her down and knock her out. Like, but then you, like, saw Juliana get taken down, but it was like she almost, like, pulled guard. And then, like, Amanda and her got into, like, some weird grappling scenarios where, like, they had to work out of them. And then in the second round, Amanda looked like she, like, hadn't grappled for 3 minutes in a long time. And she, this time, she looked like all she had been doing in her camp was grappling. And she really just changed the narrative of what lost her that first fight. I think it was her patience, her wrestling, and her ability to just control where the fight was going was the biggest difference in this fight.
We've basically got a real strong parallel here to George St. Pierre and Matt Serra and that little saga that went on with them where you had the dominant champion in Pierre, you know, losing, you know, to the underdog with the fucking KO, and everybody's like, oh shit, and then he comes back and tightens up his game and then wins the title back, and it's just kind of this thing that happened. And it doesn't mean that Serra didn't do something great. He did. It doesn't mean that Juliana Pena didn't do something great. She did. Yeah. It's more of a testament to the other fighters. Well,
everybody has their time. Yeah. Even Nunes said that after the fight. She gave her props. Yeah. She was like, I understand that, like, what happened to me, like, she deserved that. Like, that was her point in time. But, like, now it's my time still. Like, I'm back. She's like, not it's done. Not. Everyone thought it was over. And now it's just... It's still going.
A lot of these champions have that. It's hard to maintain that level, not make mistakes, not fuck up. We almost saw, you know, Shevchenko, you know, make a few critical errors in her last fight that, you know, that didn't cost her the title, but it cost her some moments.
Well, it's MMA difficult. Is that kind of sport too, where it's all about runs, like, you know,
and you're always fighting not
only in your career, but in the fights too, because we've seen so many fights, like, just turn the tide so quickly. Like, literally, it happens. You go into a fight and you could feel like you're the best fighter in the world and you're just going to spark somebody and disrespect them and you get knocked out. Think about the first time Luke Rockhold fought Michael Bisping versus the second time he fought Michael Bisping. It's a perfect example of how this game is not always about who's the best. It's about who's the best on that night at that time and who takes advantage of the windows in the fight. And I just felt like the first fight, Juliana fought a lot more patient and was a lot more like looking for the windows that were open. This fight, she fought like she was the fucking champ now, and Amanda wasn't shit. She was like...
Dude, this shit's so classic. I mean, it's Rocky III, right? I mean, we even see it in fucking drama movies. The champ gets a little complacent. Mm-hmm. They're still good. The hungry up-and-comer, and they whoop that ass, and the champ's got to go back and refocus and improve. They still got it.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
That's why Rocky III is the best movie.
Right.
And it's interesting.
So, taking nothing, like, you know, Pena had her spot. It's not a fluke, kind of like... I termed it a fluke. Like, I don't mean it like you didn't earn it or deserve it, but... You're not the GOAT. You're unfortunate that you ran up to the GOAT and you had your shine on her, and you'll always remember it as the one who fucking did that.
Yeah.
But I think what we have next, though, is the big question is, who is it? Who can beat Amanda Nunes before she's gone? Because she don't have that much left in her. She's 34. She does have two titles, but there's no 145.
She said she wants to fight 40 until she's 40. Like, I don't really see that happening.
It's easy to say if you keep the title that long. If you lose your title, you ain't gonna.
All right, so I talked to you about this before the show a bit, and you didn't really like the idea of it. But, like, at the end of the day, I think this fight happens a third time, too. Like, just because they're 1-1 against each other and there's nobody at 135 who you could really say that about. And, like, I don't know if it happens right when Juliana comes back. But I do think, like, this fight is inevitably happening a third time. Not saying that, like, Juliana has this crazy chance of, like, striking lightning twice, but just the selling of a third fight and the UFC not really having much contenders at 135, I just see this happening a third time. And outside of everyone else in the division, she's the only one, I think, who has any kind of chance against Amanda at this point, just because of what's happened in the past.
See, I see a different route happening here. I see the champ taking off to Brazil for maybe up to a year before she defends 135 again, and I think her next fight at 135 is going to be against Valentina Shevchenko. And I think that during that time period, after that fight, one of two things that will happen. During her 6 months to 1 year off, plus at least 3 month buildup for that fight, a new contender will arise at 135, or after that fight, Nunes is going to go ahead and retire.
You think so? Well, I just,
if she were to beat Shevchenko again, let's say,
yeah,
they're literally, and no one else arises. What is she going to beat Pena up? Why does she want to beat Pena up a fucking again?
I'm just saying that's what the UFC is going to do.
Or why does she want to beat Chikugian up again? Or why does she want to beat any of them up again?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying that that's a perfect world situation is what you're talking about. And I don't necessarily think it's going to be a perfect world situation with how the UFC's been running things lately, man. Like, what you're talking about is a fucking dream scenario for me.
Well, Shevchenko wants that fight.
Yeah.
You know Dana will give it to her. There's really, not though? Another contender at 35.
Yeah.
And also, by this time, this PFL season will be over by the time that Shevchenko and Nunes fight. Mm-hmm. And if Nunes were to be victorious, there is the possibility of resurfaces of a Kayla Harrison versus Nunes fight again, because we don't know how long her contract is. Maybe she signed a one-season fucking contract or a, you know, four fights which she can knock out in a fucking season. You know what I mean?
I'd like to see the details on that before I go down that road.
So, you know, that's a real dream scenario, what you just said. But I think the Shevchenko thing is more of a possibility, because both champions are in a spot where who's left in their division to fuck with at the moment.
Yeah.
They have a history together. Yes, Nunes is technically 2-0. A lot of people think that's
it's debatable.
Very debatable at best.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people want to see that fight because it really settles the GOAT question a bit.
It does come down to this, though. It depends on like where the UFC wants, when they want that to happen. Because at the end of the day, that fight could possibly retire either of those fighters.
That is a possibility.
You know what I'm saying? Well, that's why I feel like the UFC could pump the brakes on it. Like, give Amanda what she wants. Exactly, like a year off. And then that gives Juliana a year off, and then they just go a third time. Not because it's fair, not because it's anything, but because that will sell, and it will have to happen before Shevchenko. And they give Shevchenko two or three more fights, and then kind of force both of them into like fighting each other at the latest in their primes that they ever could. Like, and that's just what I feel like the UFC is going to do, because that's where they're taking this sport. All right. That's what they're taking this sport. They don't believe in super fights anymore, because there's a guaranteed dollar at the end of every card. So the super fights don't always have to happen, you know, and it's unfortunate. But, like, if Amanda beats Shevchenko, I could see Shevchenko walking away, because that's three losses against Amanda. She's already the greatest at her weight class, and she has nothing else to prove. Agreed. But in the same breath, I feel that same way about Amanda. If Amanda loses to Shevchenko and then they're 2-1 against each other, they're going to fight three more times after that.
All right. Like, well, I think that settles, you know, the two ways that this could go. But there's another question associated with this card that ties in with this fight particularly, which is, as I said in the intro, in my opinion,
nobody.
How bad, well, nobody can beat her, but how bad can the UFC commentary get? And what I am specifically referring to is the commentary during this fight.
Yeah.
Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena. Joe Rogan, Daniel Cormier would not shut up about how awesome Pena was doing. If you only listened to that commentary, you would be under the distinct impression that this was a very close fight, that that could have gone either way when it went to the scorecards, and that Amanda Nunes must have squeaked out a very close victory.
Yeah, no, she whooped her ass. It was close.
Couldn't be further from the truth. I've never seen a commentary team continuously praise a fighter who is getting their ass kicked while not saying shit about fighter doing the ass kicking, especially when it is a decorated champion coming back from an embarrassing loss, and possibly the greatest all time to ever do it.
Yeah.
I was fucking baffled.
Yeah, the whole internet was going all over about it.
When does this stop?
Yeah.
Like, this is like politics. It's like political spin. Is the UFC in their ear saying spin the fight this way so that the casuals stay more interested because they think the fight is closer?
I don't know.
The only thing that makes sense to me. Because these aren't stupid people.
Yeah, no.
I mean, I talk shit about DC a bit, but dude, he's a smart guy. He's got a great fight IQ, maybe a genius fight IQ.
You know what I think their overall problem is? I think that they get too caught up in the narrative. They get too caught up in the comeback story of like, oh, Juliana Pena, she shocked the world last time. She's going to do it again. Blah, 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 blah. And that's what he was doing when she was walking out. Because, like, I was at the bar, so I couldn't hear the in-fight commentary, but, like, I heard when they were walking out, and that's what DC was doing. He was like, is she going to go in? Last time before the fight, she pulled me to the side before the fight and told me, I'm going to shock the world, and I told her, you're crazy, and then she did it. So is she going to do it again tonight? Da, 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 da. And, like, she's just getting her face bashed in, and he's, like, just talking about that the whole fucking time. It's like, that's cool and all, bro, but, like, what the fuck is going on in the ring is completely different from what the narrative that you're trying to spin around this fight is. It's like two different things.
I'm telling you, I've never seen a fighter eat elbows
from
guard and then get all the talk about is how great she's doing.
Yeah.
It's the most egregious.
And then when she got that arm bar, they were like, it's over. It's like, what? No, it's not over. He said that. He said that when she was in the armbar. She's like, it's over!
It's like, see, no, at one point said he didn't know what the judges were going to fucking say.
That's crazy. That's crazy to me. It was like literally an easy score. It was five rounds and then possibly a 10-8.
It's not shit talking or hype or you know, anymore to say that this is the worst commentary in all of combat sports. I challenge anybody listening to fucking prove me wrong. Show me worse professional fucking commentary. The commentary's job is to be a fucking play-by-play guy and a fucking color guy, and sometimes they throw in a third guy to talk the fucking ads and the other shit like John Anik does. Yeah. The UFC gets it all wrong. They don't talk about shit that's going on. It's story time, and now spin.
Yeah.
Spin on what viewers are seeing. And every once in a while, they'll be like, oh, that's a great right hand. And every once in a while, they'll explain shit.
Yeah.
They'll be like, oh shit, you guys can explain like what a fucking omoplata is.
Yeah.
Because if you keep saying the words omoplata, about half or more of the audience are going, what language is he speaking?
Yeah. True. You know what? I like it even better when it's just Rogan and Anik. That's just like, that's fine. I don't even know why they have to throw DC in there too. Because even like DC and Anik by themselves are better too. It's like the three-man thing because they're all like close friends. It turns into like they're shooting the shit during the fight. And it's like, that's cool. That's cool like when they're on the podcast or something. But like,
yeah, you can have your favorites when you're on the podcast.
It's just DC just tries to tell too many stories, man. He's too built up in the story and versus like what's going on in the fight. And you know what? Like, a lot of people have called him out for this. Even other commentators, like freaking Dominic Cruz. He talks about how he's like, man, all DC talks about is stories. Like, he doesn't talk about anybody, like, how they land punches or how they, you know, how their stats and stuff like that. Too.
Have you seen what happened with that? Did you see who Cormier went to for advice?
What was that?
I mean, I'm not making this up. You can Google it. There's news stories about it. He said this publicly. He went to Rogan. And you know what Rogan told him? Fuck him. Don't listen to the criticisms. Now he's like, fuck him. I'm following Joe Rogan's lead, and now look what we get.
Yeah,
we
but
get Joe Rogan and him being absolutely off the fucking charts with what they're talking about. Yeah. It had nothing to do with what was happening on the screen. Whether it's the UFC was telling them to or not to, it doesn't matter. That shit made no sense. Yeah. It wasn't what was happening, and it was fucking ridiculous.
Yeah,
it took away from a great performance by Amanda Nunes.
Yeah, Amanda Nunes whooped her ass. In the end, that's the problem, though. It's like you guys told him to go to his friend. Like we're friends, dude. If we're friends and we're both at the peak of all MMA like media and no one can really tell us shit and you told me, hey bro, they said we should tone it down, you'd probably tell me, yeah, fuck them too. That's why you know what I mean? Like I understand consulting with your friends, but at this point DC needs to get better at commentating. It's not good.
I mean, they clearly don't do what everybody else in combat sports does, which is describe the action taking place.
Honestly, if I'm going to be real, I feel like the production of, like, this is going to be a little controversial. I don't know. I feel like the production of the PFL is better than the production at the UFC right now.
Oh, I agree. The commentary is better, too.
Like the
BKFC commentary crushes this shit. And BKFC is simple to explain.
Yeah, well, I just feel like, no, take the commentary out of it. I'm talking about just their production
value overall.
Overall. The PFL, they show a live punch count. The PFL is geared towards them. Like, as much shit as I've talked about the PFL in the past, I feel like a hypocrite right now. But I'm telling you, the PFL is doing it the fucking right way, dude. Now, if you're a casual fan, they literally give you a live punch count, speed of punches, live, like, total strike, like variety, whether it's to the body, head, like, all the different, like, variety strike. Their refs have body cams on them. Like, there's just all this shit that they do that has just, I feel like, has
it enhances made it the better. Viewing yeah. experience.
It makes it
easier to yeah. understand for people who are just tuning in.
Yeah.
Yep, 100%. While the UFC doesn't.
UFC's like, dude, we've been doing this for years. What we were at the top of the game. And that's kind of the problem, is I feel like they're at the top of the game and they just feel like.
Oh, here's what will happen. If somebody in the octagon will try an omoplata while on the ground, and then Joe will say it, that, oh, he's trying an omoplata right now. Uh-huh. And then DC will chime in about how this one time in the gym, so-and-so did an omoplata, yeah. and he told him this, that, and the other. And meanwhile, a bunch more happens on the screen, yeah. and you know what happens? Nobody explains
and then all of a sudden,
to anybody.
And then all of a sudden, Anik will be like, oh, and a nice right hand! Right.
And nobody explains to anybody what the fucking hell an omoplata is.
Yeah.
This is how you grow the sport. You explain what's happening. Mm-hmm. MMA needs it more than anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's so much variety of shit that goes on in there, you know? Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, that shitty commentary. Yeah. Like, that's mm-hmm. literally your job, is to explain what the fuck just happened. So they don't just think these guys are wrestling.
Yeah.
Look at them wrestling on the ground.
Well, and that's what does happen when DC is not in there. When it's just Rogan and Anik, or back when it was Rogan and Mike Goldberg and stuff, like, there was actual explanations that Joe Rogan would give to all the different positions and strikes and stuff like that. But when it's the three-man team, for some reason, when it's DC, because even when it's a three-man team, when it's Cruz, Joe Rogan, and Anik, I can listen to that all day because they're actually talking about what's going on. There's stories from here and there, but like it's more filler when the filler needs to happen. Like that's the difference. Is DC like knows that there's time he has to fill, so he thinks he has to fill it all with bullshit. But what he doesn't realize is like being a commentary. People do that in all the other sports. There's time for filler. I understand when there's time for filler, but when there's action going on, there's no time for filler. You shut up. You cut the filler off and talk about the action first. And you can go back to that stupid-ass story you're going to tell. Mm-hmm. But wait till the action has been explained and then go into the story. Because people in football do it all the time. Oh, it's a touchdown. I remember when he was a kid throwing touchdowns at Notre Dame. Like, you know what I mean? But it's like, but then when they're in the play and they're throwing the touchdown, they're not saying, hey, I remember when this kid was playing, blah, 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 blah. Oh, by the way, he just threw a touchdown, guys. No, that's not how you fucking commentate a fight. You don't go, Amanda, she was at ATT and all this shit, while she's fucking bashing her face in and the people don't understand what the fuck is going on on the screen. You know what I mean?
That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
And being that you and I both love this sport, we want the sport to grow. The sport grows when people understand it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it helps you respect what you're seeing more. We should be respecting what Pena was attempting, what Nunes was fending off, you know, while on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, we just get all this nonsense. And at some point, when does it stop? This isn't fucking the B-team here.
Yeah.
I mean, this is supposed to be the premier.
I don't understand how Cruz is the B-team. I'd take Cruz over DC all day.
It's time for Joe. I'll just say, I love Joe Rogan. I think he's fucking great. Dude, it's time to retire, dog. You're not into this UFC shit anymore. Remember, like, a month ago? When he laid out his plan to fix MMA judging, and it's literally shit that's already been done. Like, dude, you just laid out the rules. Like, you don't know the rules. You're commentating on shit, and you don't know the fucking MMA judging rules anymore. And I get it. You're a busy man. You got the biggest podcast in the world. You're at the fucking comedy club 3 nights a week. It's cool, man. Stop!
Yeah, but I also feel like he... If they're going to keep DC on, like, DC... Like when he's with Anik will let him run.
DC's
rumble.
Not my answer.
That's no, I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But that's the thing. If Joe goes, DC's getting put in his place.
UFC has done fucked up and not cultivated these commentators.
I like
team,
Bisping,
Rogan
too.
Rogan needs to go. He doesn't know what's going on anymore.
Give me Bisping, Anik, and Felder, dude. Those three are my favorites.
Before I hit this bowl, dude, look at how purple and green that is. This shit is fucking nice, right?
Yeah. Well, let's talk a bit about what the fight coming up this next week.
Yeah, we're just going to touch on this shit.
Yeah. We got Thiago Santos taking on Jamahal Hill.
Light heavyweight affair.
Mm-hmm. A lot of power going into this fight here. Both these guys have the chance to knock each other out literally at any moment.
They do.
Honestly, for the division, I'd like to see Hill pick up the victory just because I think Santos is kind of over the hill at this point.
I do as well. He doesn't need to knock off another young contender.
Yeah. And Hill's fun to watch, man. He's interesting. He makes funny videos online. He's good on the camera. This could be a good little this could be a good step up in competition.
It's been
for him,
a fun run with Santos.
Yeah.
You know, he's got power. It's been cool. I don't want to see him. I don't think he could possibly beat Yuri. Yuri beats Glover again, which I'm pretty sure he will. I'm not really interested in him as a possible championship material. Time for new blood. I'm with you. I'd like to see he'll get the big win here.
Yeah.
We do got Vicente Luque versus Jeff Neal as the co-main event at welterweight.
That's a big fight at welterweight.
Fight,
yeah.
That's a good fight. Neal's underrated. He goes in there and makes
super
it.
Super underrated, yeah.
You know, Luque gets a lot of praise. You know, we met him a couple weeks ago at UFC.
Luque's just a dog, bro, is what it really comes down to.
Super nice guy.
Yeah. Like, he just gets in dog fights and he just never goes out. You know what I mean? Like, even the fights he's lost, he just takes beating sometimes. That's what I like about it. He's like a fighter's fighter. You know what I mean? He goes out on his shield and he goes to war. And, like, that's dangerous.
Big and powerful.
That's a dangerous game when you fight someone like Jeff Neal.
Yeah.
Jeff Neal has a lot of power. He's got a lot of, like, real solid technique as well.
I haven't seen the odds. I figure that Jeff Neal is an underdog here. I think he's going to win, though. As much as I like Luque, fucking nice guy, always fun to watch. I think Jeff Neal's going to surprise us all with a fucking victory here. Maybe even a KO.
Yeah, I could see that happening, but I just have a hard time picking against Luque just because I've just seen him just in dogfights so many times. But I don't know. It could be Neal's time. Neal goes flies under the radar.
You know, just touching on a couple other fights before we move on to boxing. We do have Sam Alvey appearing yet again on this card. This is a fighter I'm starting to get concerned about. Look, I like this kid.
Yeah.
Dude, he's fun. He's smiling Sam. How do you not like the guy who's always smiling and super fucking nice in every
interview?
I
thought he retired after the last fight.
Yeah, he's been getting slept left and right. Mm-hmm. And here he is again. Like, I don't like it when you see these guys get, like, four knockouts in a row. I mean, the victim of four knockouts in a row, five.
Well, this is that middleweight.
Yeah.
He's been, like, fighting all over the place. He fought heavyweight.
He's
fought light heavyweight.
Down.
Now he's going middleweight.
So, I'm really... He's fighting Mikael Olszewski. I don't know how to say your name. Sorry, dog. I don't like it. I'm kind of disappointed. I wish he'd retire.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he's... If he gets the victory here, I hope he goes out with a win.
Yeah.
If he gets knocked out again, bro, please stop, man. You're fucking seem to be like a great guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Terrence McKenney's making an appearance here.
Yep.
Always been exciting when we see him. He's fighting Eric Gonzalez. I'd say we want Terrence to get a victory here. We really like fresh blood in the shark tank that is lightweight.
In his last fight, I think he learned a lot too. You know, he got a little taste of like what the upper, like that next level of the division, and he did well. You know, that fight with Dober was almost his. You know, he just got to learn to be a little bit more patient. That's just a young fighter. You know what I mean? And
Drew Dober is not.
Drew Dober is no. Yeah, we saw last weekend. Drew Dober is no pushover.
So it was a good test. I think this is a good, you know, bounce back fight here for McKenney. I expect him to get a nice victory here.
Yeah,
and continue to rise up to the lightweight ranks as long as he's matched up
correctly,
you know, appropriately as he continues to grow as a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
That's really about it on this fucking card that I feel like talking about.
Yep.
You know, we did have some. It is boxing news that's making a lot of noise here.
Yeah, sure it is.
You know, this information broke during the UFC card, and it is that the Jake Paul versus Rockman, how do you say his name?
Rockman.
Has been canceled. Rockman Jr., actually. Weeks out before the fight, supposedly it's been canceled by Jake Paul and MVP, citing weight issues by their opponent, which I've heard both sides of the story right now. Now, to refresh anybody who might not know, a lot of people don't follow Jake Paul outside of his little fan base. But, you know, this guy was a replacement fighter. Rahman was, after Tommy Fury was denied entry into the U.S.
Yeah.
Which Jake Paul has been trying to spin that as Tommy Fury blew the fight and was scared. No, he had visa problems. He couldn't get into the country. They didn't want to do the fight in the U.K. Replacement fighter. In comes former sparring partner who sparred Jake Paul at 230. He's a natural bridger weight, which is a WBC thing, which is a 224-pound limit, which means he's a heavyweight.
Yeah.
Okay. They asked him to come down and lose all this weight on short notice. They did a weight check. What is he, 2 weeks out?
He's 221 or something like that. He has to weigh 200.
And they canceled the fight, not even making it to the scale.
Yeah.
I cry shenanigans, as are several others. I think it's bullshit.
Yeah, I think it's bullshit too.
Personally, I think what happened is, and this is pure speculation on my part, but during the press conference, we saw it come out where Jake Paul was trying to brag up the fact that he whooped up on Rahman during the fucking sparring sessions in the gym. Mm-hmm. He responds back like, bro, I was fucking fighting you one-handed because your team specifically asked me to.
Yeah.
And it's and on top of that, it's sparring. And if you were a real boxer, you'd know sparring is sparring, bro. We don't talk about it outside of the gym. It's not real fighting. It doesn't have shit to do, especially when you're brought in to work with somebody who's a fucking novice boxer.
Yeah.
Whether you want to admit it or not, Jake Paul is a novice boxer. And Rahman is a professional boxer whose dad was a boxer. And he grew up in a gym. He's got way more experience. Mm-hmm. I don't think Jake Paul knew that. I don't think his team was sharing that information with him because he sincerely seems to believe that his sparring sessions over these more experienced guys count. I think that information came out in the press conference. I think Jake Paul checked with his team afterwards and was like, was that true? And they were like, well, yeah. And then suddenly here we are. Oh, my God, here's an excuse to cancel the fight. Spin it off on this guy because you know what else there was, Paul? There's a fucking replacement fighter they already had on deck for this fight. In case there was what? A weight issue. They don't want to go with him either. And then Rahman puts out a video that says he'd take all the penalties and fight him for the bare minimum of $5,000 just to have the fight go forward. And if you barred me at 230, what's the problem fighting me at 215? Nothing. Still canceled. Your thoughts?
So here's the thing. Talking about winning in sparring matches inside of a fight camp do not make any sense to me. Because here's the deal. If I am Jake Paul and you're Siim Rockman and I'm training to fight Nate Robinson, you're coming in to give me work before I fight Nate Robinson. Why on earth would you try to knock me out?
Nate Robinson, not a professional fighter.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? If you're Rockman who's being brought in by his camp
and being paid money.
Yeah, being paid money to help him get some work in before he has a fight coming up, why on earth would you try to knock the person out?
You're gonna go all out there and try to whoop his ass. Lose
like your if you're Jake Paul, I get why you're trying to whoop his ass.
Of course.
But you cannot wholeheartedly believe that Rockman was trying to knock you out during a training session, during a fight camp for a fight you had coming up.
He was trying to give,
he was trying to give you looks, trying to help you improve and get ready for what you're going to see in there. He wasn't trying to go in there and knock you out. And that's why I have a kind of problem with what Jake Paul like has started to build his boxing acumen on. Is he talks about a lot of times how I've sparred all these world champions, I've held my own, and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, have you though? Because it's not about taking people to the like to the woodshed in a sparring session when they're in a training camp or you're in a training camp. it's not like he's just like straight up sparring outside of camp with like all these world champions or something. There's no way, bro. There's no fucking way. There's no way that's happening. And like his idea of like, oh, I'm good enough to keep up with these guys. I'll give you this. Jake Paul has good pop. He has a boxing ability, but he is not, like you said, he's a novice boxer. He's not necessarily ready to be in there with guys who have 200 amateur fights and, you know, 10, 15 pro fights. It's just not where he's at. I don't know why he feels that now he has to, like, pretend that he's the best boxer in the world. Keep boxing all these other idiots. Keep boxing KSI and all the other YouTube guys who are boxers. That's fine. Stay in that realm. Don't come into the realm of, like, real pro boxing and then start making up bullshit and rules around which people cannot navigate and then blame them for the breakdown of a fight. You right. asked a heavyweight boxer to come down to cruiserweight in 16 days or something like that, what, 20 days? Mm-hmm. It's just not something, like, don't get me yeah. wrong. I've seen people cut tons of weight. I've seen people lose, you know, 20, 30 pounds inside of a week to make weight in the past. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but the rate at which he would be compromised going into the fight would just wouldn't be physically fair in a sport where you're getting punched in the face over and over and over. And I do think that is something that goes into why Jake Paul chose all those rules to make the feat impossible for him and easier for Jake, because he needs to make up that extra percentage that he doesn't have as far as a fighter to meet. But if he can get him completely compromised, he can maybe land that shot that's going to shake his whole nervous system, because he's just not going to be properly ready to fight.
Exactly. You know, let me back up what you said about sparring. You know, with personal experience, I mean, I grew up in a boxing gym. I spent years as an amateur fighter, and I've been that novice guy that you're in sparring sessions. They don't put you in with the other novice fighters. Yeah. They put you in with the guys who are good, yeah. so that way you don't get hurt. Yeah. Just like in jiu-jitsu, when you go roll, it's not white belt versus white belt when you're learning. They put you in with people who are experienced so you don't get hurt.
Yeah.
Okay. And because the other fighter is taking it easy, mm-hmm. it's easy for new boxers coming into gyms to think that they're better than they are. It's a pretty frequent thing that happens, because you're like, shit, this guy won the Golden Gloves. I fucking just did two rounds with him. I hit him three solid times. He didn't do shit to me. And then you know what happens? The coach just tells the guy to unleash a little bit. And then they put you in your fucking place, and then you're like, oh, shit, okay.
But that's the problem. Jake Paul has enough money where no one's ever going to put him in his place.
That's my point. That's what I mean. He's not a dude in a real gym doing real shit. He's a fucking rich boy doing rich boy shit, paying big money for his sparring partner. They're not doing that shit. Nobody's putting him in his fucking place.
Yeah.
Nobody's telling him he can't do it. He puts on shit, and it sells.
Because that's the thing. He does have a good camp. He has a world-class camp where he's paying for the best of the best of the best.
Sure, but he's not giving him the real shit.
Yeah,
they'll whoop your ass, put you in your place because you thought you were better than you were. Shit, that's what the gym is for.
Yeah.
Like, fuck, bro.
Yeah.
I got to be in both those places. I got to be the guy who thought he was better than he was, who then got tuned up by the fucking good guy, and then I got it reversed, and I got to go in with the novices when they came in after a few years, and I got to be the guy that's, I can turn it up on this clown for a minute.
Yeah.
Because he thinks he's the shit, awesome.
You turn it
up for a round, and suddenly they're like, okay, I'll listen to my coach. I'm not the shit. I get it now.
But that's a problem.
And then they're trainable again.
That's a problem, is if you really look at it, Jake, in those, three or four fights he has taken people who would be classified as novice boxers but did great things in other realms and masqueraded them as boxing world champions, but they weren't.
Right.
They were two. One was a wrestler who was... he's an Olympic wrestler that has nothing to do with boxing. He came in fucking 30 pounds overweight and fucking never boxed a day in his life. He wasn't a good striker in any kind of mixed martial arts. He was known for his ground and pound in wrestling, and you knocked him out.
He was barely a step above a Taibo boxer.
And then you did the same thing when you brought in Tyron Woodley, who is a fucking NCAA All-American wrestler who has power in his hands. Don't get me wrong, but it's not... he's not a pro boxer.
He hadn't knocked anybody out in MMA in years.
Yeah, and he's not a pro boxer.
On a huge losing streak.
He wasn't a pro boxer.
Never.
Never. Never could be. And that's the thing, is now you just, now you come in and you're fighting these real guys who are maybe even Rockman to a certain point is not, you know, one of the best boxers in the world, but he is damn sure good enough to get in the ring and show what he's done in his amateur career coming up and how he deserves to be where he's at versus Jake, who has got where he's at based on hype around things that are kind of I don't want to call them freak shows because it's not a freak show fight, but it's also like it's not
real boxing.
Yeah, it's not real boxing.
And part of it, honestly, it boils down to a little bit. It circles back to the commentary in MMA and the UFC that we talked about earlier, because whenever you're watching UFC, they refer to what the guys are doing when they're punching as boxing.
Yeah.
Oh, Juliana Pena's boxing is great, or Amanda Nunes' boxing looks crisp. They're not boxing, bro.
Striking.
They're punching or they're striking. That's not boxing that they're doing in there.
Yeah.
Like, boxers don't have to worry about getting taken down. You hold your hands different, you look different, your options are different. It's not boxing.
There's maybe like 6 or 7 UFC fighters that actually like show some kind of boxing style when they fight.
Out of like 500. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly. But everybody just calls it boxing. I think punching is boxing. It's not.
Mm-mm.
Like,
it's different.
And it boils over into this, where people think that, oh, Tyrone, he's got good boxing. No, no, he doesn't. He never did.
Yeah. No. No. He's good at, So,
yeah, Jake Paul got pussy. He got scared. He knew he was going to get embarrassed. His brand can't afford getting embarrassed by this guy. Way better to cancel the card and not even fight the backup replacement dude who probably whoop his fucking shit up too and see if he can't get another MMA guy to fight. I guarantee you his next fight's against some fucking MMA dude.
I bet you it's Nate Diaz.
He's probably looking at that, hoping that that is what happens.
Which also is just, like, he's going to stack all the cards against Nate too, because he's going to make Nate fight him at like 185. Which, like, Nate shouldn't be 185.
Nate barely qualifies at 70. It's just because he's older and thicker. Honestly.
You think Jake Paul could beat Nate?
I don't know. Nate is one of those guys that actually has boxing. He's got a legit boxing coach, and he does actual boxing training.
Nick used to train with Andre Ward.
Boxing.
Yeah.
He does a lot of sparring, just legitimate boxing.
Yeah.
He's still got a size disadvantage here. I think that Nate could probably win that fight.
Yeah.
Dog,
again, I feel like he would beat Jake's ass in the press conference.
I love fucking Nate, but he's not a real boxer either.
Yeah.
Like, fight a fucking boxer, bro.
You think Fury would have beat him?
Yes, I do. And Fury's not that good, but he's a boxer, dude.
Yeah.
Like, he's had real
and he's actually
time.
Jake's size.
they're actually the same size. They're not.
I think he's a little bit bigger, but yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's pretty clear. I mean, Dana White went out and said he thinks it's because of the lack of sales. That could play a part in it.
That could too, yeah.
Even more than the lack of sales, the brand damage would have been terrible with a loss, dude. And what does he get with a win?
Well, that's the same thing as, like, if you lose in front of nobody, like, those small voices are going to be real loud, too, when they tell everyone what happened, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It would hurt his brand really bad if he would have lost that fight in front of just terrible viewership, which it probably would have been.
MSG is expensive.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not even talking live. Live, whatever. You can pack it up with, like, YouTubers and all that shit. You can pack it with them. But I'm talking the pay-per-view sales are a whole other game. They are not selling that pay-per-view, and that's Showtime. Showtime is not in the business of just, you know, fucking wasting money. If they think something's not going to make money, they'll pull the plug. They do that all the time.
And to continue the bad look for Jake Paul and MVP, his promotions company, is that not only do they cancel this fight, they throw not only the shade on Rockman for the weight issues, but then they also specifically ask the boxing community to hold him responsible for all of the other fighters on the card, including Amanda Serrano and the rest of the undercard, who get no payday now because of him. I think that's outrageous. Like,
yeah,
what
crazy.
An outrageous thing to fucking say, you piece of shit.
Yeah, that's
like, you didn't even let this go to the fucking weigh-in.
Like,
we're weeks out and you canceled before he hit the scale before the fight.
Yeah.
So shut the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking about you cost
if he Amanda like if he payday. Like showed up if he like showed up to the weigh-in and was like 25 pounds overweight, I'd be like, come on, dude, like that's fucked up. Blah blah blah. But you canceled it with him being like what 16 pounds away from the weight limit with 7 days to go. They said he had to fight him at 205. 205 was the official weight class. He said that he weighed 221.
Dude, we've seen
that's 16 pounds in 7 days. He's in the 7 day period is not fucking impossible. I've seen people do that in fucking 4 days. Like it's not impossible.
I'm not recommending it.
I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's recommendable. I'm not saying any of that shit. I'm just saying it's possible, and they're covering their tracks.
Was it Darren Till that went blind?
Yeah, bro. He cut like fucking like 12 in a day or something, he said.
What about fucking Chris Weidman when he came in to was it Damian Maya, and he lost like 27 pounds in 4 days or something?
Yeah, something
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Again, not recommending it.
It's a terrible thing to do,
but you can do it.
Yeah, like,
it's totally wrong to say that he couldn't have made weight. Yeah. So fuck Jake Paul. He's getting exposed, and he knew it. And he did what he had to do to save Brandon. Shift the whole blame for everything on this dude.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a replacement fighter, too. Just like he did with Tommy Fury. Blaming, saying Tommy Fury, it was his fault.
He just has the voice over them because none of those guys really give a fuck about that part of the... Tommy Fury does, but, like, the social media part of things, like in all seriousness, like, Tyron Woodley was a championship, but, like, he's not that serious about, like, all that shit. Ben Askren doesn't give a fuck that he got knocked out by Jake Paul. Like, fucking... In the boxing world, if Haseem Rahman gets knocked out by Jake Paul, and he loses respect of all the like actual boxers out there.
Yeah.
So like that's just the actual thing that makes sense is to cancel it because nobody wants to get knocked out in front of nobody. Like I said,
well, we'll see what his next move is. I wish he would. Fight somebody real so somebody can end this farce.
Mm-hmm.
But I would bet money that he's going to pick a non-boxer for his next fight watch.
Yeah, probably.
And you're probably right. It's going to be Nate Diaz because Nate's either got, most likely the Chimaev fight, either that's he's going to lose that fight or the fight's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And he's going to hit the expiration date a couple weeks later on his contract. Either way, he's out the door. But we'll see.
Honestly,
we'll see, dog.
Yeah. I think it doesn't happen if Nate fights Chimaev, though. Because if Nate fights Chimaev, he's going to get fucking eaten alive, bro.
I still don't believe that fight happened.
I don't either, but I'm just saying, like, if it does happen, I think it ends the opportunity for him to fight Jake Paul because I think it's going to fuck Nate up, like, physically. Because Nate's just scar tissue everywhere. And Chimaev, all he does is just throw haymakers. That usually busts those areas of your face up, so...
Absolutely. Well, we'll see how it all plays out, my friend.
Yep. Unfortunately.
That wraps the show for today, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. If you're brand new to the show, you can catch us everywhere that podcasts are distributed. Plus, we have video up on YouTube, which includes lots of other little cuts from the show and other things as well. We have everything all up on a brand new website for you. Where is it at, Paul?
SWATMMA.com, where you can head over there, click the gear button, and support the podcast. And then head over to Instagram and follow us at SWATMMA Podcast.
Peace. Later.